Big Dog Ball Talk. Coming at you hot. Hot as ever. Hot under the goddamn sun. Hopefully everybody's staying cool throughout this crazy heat wave that is, you know, running rampant here in Jordan and I's native Ontario. You know, pretty big province, but it seems like it's kind of hitting everywhere. And I'm sure there's a lot of other places feeling the heat right now. Obviously, tons and tons and tons to talk about here. The Oklahoma City Thunder are your 2025 NBA champions. Congratulations to them. We're going to dive into all the insanity of Game 7, the heartbreak, you know, the triumph, everything that went into that massive game, as well as another blockbuster trade. And we aren't even at the NBA draft yet, which, you know, is coming up this Wednesday. Hopefully get you guys a draft preview as well beforehand. But Jordan, this is a hell of a time to be alive in you know, this climate. I was crying. I was saying I hate all the rain. We were getting rain. Actually, even all the way up until Saturday morning, we got another thunderstorm. Rained out my tea time. So that's kind of bullshit.
That sucks.
But then I made up for it in spectacularly disastrous fashion. Are you familiar with the recording artist Billy Talent, the band?
I believe so.
You know that one? Yeah, you know those guys. They were on NHL like 04. So they were doing this big concert down here called Border Fest. And so they bring in all these other bands stuff. So like the other bands that were in the lineup for the Saturday night were Hinder, which you may know from Lips of an Angel and nothing else.
Yes.
They were there. They played Red Jumpsuit Apparatus.
They just play that song and then go away.
They played a bunch of bullshit, and that's all anybody wanted them to play. but if I can be honest with you, Jordan, I feel that I can.
Really
and of
good
course,
to hear your voice. Go on.
But it's not even that guy anymore. It's a different guy. That guy apparently is going crazy on drugs, so they kicked him out of the band, which I don't really understand. Well, I feel like in podcasting,
hard on the vocal cords singing that way. I don't know if he sings all his songs in that fucking tone, but okay.
It's just how he lives his life. I feel like music, movies, and podcasting, you should be allowed to do hard drugs. I think it should be encouraged. But he wasn't on hard drugs, Jordan, I did have too much to drink. I was overserved by myself before we even got there.
Shame.
No dinner. Just said, fuck it. I'm raw dogging this. Something
no,
you
see,
experience.
You can't do that.
Yep.
I've done that.
Mm-hmm. Out there.
Goes horribly.
38 degree heat.
No, man.
I think Billy Talent probably got to listen to 15 minutes of their set. And, Savannah, God bless her heart, had to toss my blackout ass in the cab, and I was just I was not having a good night. It was a rough time, man. Still like Billy Talent, from what I remember, it was a good time. But everybody out there, stay hydrated, keep yourself cool, eat lots of dinner if you're gonna go out and have seven, eight shots, 10 beers. You will get fucked up, I'm telling you right now, and it will be embarrassing for you and everybody around you. Luckily I ended up finding out after I had blacked out that three other people that was in our group that went also did. So it seems it was a totally communal fine. Thing. I was just the first one down. Tragic night for me on Saturday night. we're going to try and avoid that into the near future. But something that was even more tragic, Jordan, was Game 7 of the NBA Finals. I don't know. I really didn't want to lead off with it. I didn't want to lead off with this being the topic of the conversation, but I feel like this really is the biggest part of the game. This was the most noticeable. It was the biggest factor that played into how this ended up finishing up. Tyrese Halliburton, for those who haven't seen, it's official. He tore his Achilles in Game 7. It's going to be like Jason Tatum, Damian Lillard. All these guys that got injured in the playoffs, in major fashion, they all are, probably going to miss, if not the entirety of the 2025-26 NBA season coming up, pretty much the majority of it, they're going to be missed. That's brutal, man. For a guy who, was playing through and fighting through that calf injury that we discussed to try and propel his team into this, crazy underdog story. And again, we were believers. We said we previewed Game 7, and we both took the Pacers to win this game. And they were starting out hot. 9 points in 7 minutes. I mean, Halliburton looked fired up. And yeah, no contact injury. He goes down. He's screaming and crying, pounding the hardwood. And you just knew that something had gone wrong. And then they show that replay. The slow-mo was just like Katie. You can literally see the tendon snap and ripple through his calf. And that was all she wrote for Halliburton's night. And, you know, the Pacers, they fought admirably. You know, they did their best. You know, shout out to guys like TJ McConnell and Siakam. Like, they Ben Mathurin down the stretch, you know, was really trying to shoulder a lot of that offensive load. But obviously, you know, you lose that guy. And I had said this going into game six, man, like when he was kind of game time decision to play, that if like he wasn't in the lineup, you know, obviously it's the talent of it, but it's also, you know, having that leader not on the court with you, not even on the sideline. And it was just a heartbreaking way for the series to finish. I do think, you know, unfortunately, this is one of those situations where people will look at this Thunder title now through a bit of a crooked lens. And I usually like to say, you know, that's bullshit and that's not fair. But I do think that anything could have happened if Tyrese doesn't get injured in this game.
Yeah, and hey, this is how it goes. We're people who give sports takes. We both picked the Pacers, so obviously, you know, that's what we're going to say for all time. Exactly. If he hadn't gone down, that would have been a Pacers win. And we can literally only go off of those 7 minutes when he was playing.
Mm-hmm.
You can call me crazy. You can say this is like ridiculous, but it actually, in that opening frame of the game, it felt to me like the Pacers absolutely could do it. I obviously thought that going into it. Because, you know, this was a tied up 3-3 series. Indiana had already won on the road there in game one. But, like, the evidence that I have of the game, the fact that he was, you know, 3-for-4 on threes, his third three came off a miss that he kind of relocated on offensive rebound, and he just pulled it again. Like, that was what all of the Tyrese Halliburton haters, if there's any still out there, were, like, screaming about the entire time. The only thing you could really nitpick about the guy is that he kind of floated in and out and wasn't aggressive, especially early on in games. And if that was any indication of how aggressive he was going to be in that game, and you had other guys, you know, performing at a, you know, an average level on that Pacers team, that looked like it looked like it was going to be their moment to go in there and do it. He was like John at the crowd too after that timeout that the Thunder called. Like, they just all looked fired up and just cohesive, classic Pacers basketball stuff was going on. Siakam had hit a three. Like, They weathered that storm. That crowd, the energy in that crowd, especially after Tyrese hit his second three, you could hear like the groan and the like, oh no, like that crowd was going to be tight. Like,
dude, there was a lot of Pacers fans there too.
Yeah, 100%. This is just so fucking, like, I'm depressed over this.
Dude,
I was
awful
last night. The second it happened, it's just like, I'm almost at a loss for words, because like that was supposed to be every game seven, especially in the finals, that we can go back in time, like in our lifetime, or at least like when we're used to as far back as we can remember watching basketball, whether it's 2010, 2013, 2016, you know, the last three game sevens of the NBA finals, like they're close. They're supposed to be intense, close things that go down to the wire, things people talk about like years later. And it's also just so good for the league and for people who are like tuning into the NBA playoffs. Like, I bet there was a lot of people who literally hadn't watched any of the NBA playoffs until that game seven. They're like, oh, this is a game seven here. Let me see. And for it to be taken away from all of us like that in 7 minutes, like, it's just, it's one of the what if just sort of horrible moments, you know, in the NBA. And it's just really, really bad in on so many different levels. And yeah, so obviously congrats to the Thunder. They deserved it. They're a 68-win team. They might well have won that game no matter what happened last night. The crowd after, you know, especially in the third quarter when they started to pull away a little bit, that crowd, they really fed off that energy again. That crowd's been waiting, you know, and that fan base has been waiting for this, you know, for you know, a decent amount of time now. Like they were kind of spoiled early on when they moved from Seattle.
Yeah.
They you move there with a young Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook's there right away. And so they saw some early success, but they never actually got their chip until now. It feels like a long time coming. And that's a well-deserved sort of win for them. But I agree with what a lot of people are saying about how this season has ended, is that like, for me, the team of the season, though, is the Pacers. The team of the playoffs is the Pacers. Like, mm-hmm. they captured such a, like, a rare feeling, especially in a league like the NBA, where everyone's like, oh, everything's predetermined. You know who's going to be there at the end, you know, who's be standing at the end at the very beginning of the year. They, all of that, like, all the magic that you want out of, like, Cinderella runs and, like, this team that came out of nowhere, who we're all, like, you know, hoping happens at some point, but it never does. It actually did this year. It actually came true. They got to game seven of the finals. And if they had won, it would have undoubtedly been, like we talked about, the craziest championship in the NBA's history. Like, it just would have been the most unlikely thing ever. And so, yeah, it sucks. You know, we can talk about X's and O's in the game. And, you know, it almost doesn't even matter at this point, because, you know, there's nothing else to sort of go forward with. That was, you know, the final deciding one. But, you know, credit the Thunder for sort of, you know, I think obviously the Tyrese Haliburton going down is bad for the Pacers. Like, it's bad for the team he's on. But it's also, it kind of throws off the other team a little bit too, because it's like, okay, all of a sudden, you've got to adjust to the emotions of that. It's like, how the other team, how are they going to, you know, adjust their game plan now to play us? We maybe feel a little bit on the back foot too. Like, how aggressive do we want to be? Because you also obviously, as a human, just kind of feel bad that their best guy is now out.
Yeah.
But they came back in that third. Classic Thunder stuff. Really, really tough defense, forcing a shitload of turnovers. You know, they had guys hit shots. Cason Wallace hit shots. Lou Dort hit his shots. Jalen Williams had a pretty good game, and SGA went kind of Kobe on them. Very inefficient, but he got his points. You know, he's the finals MVP, capped off what is undoubtedly now the greatest Canadian season in history. It probably already was
the best Canadian player of all time. I think at this point you can talk peak to peak with him and Steve Nash. Like, I don't think anyone's taken hit Nash over SGA, which is crazy to say. I mean, like, he's always been the top of the top. Like, any Canadian baller was compared. Like, you know, people thought maybe Andrew Wiggins would give him a run for his money. And, you know, my heart had another. Anthony Bennett, shout out to him. Jamal Murray, all these guys. But, yeah, SGA really, really stands alone. Only guy who you can compare really career to career with now.
Yeah. So, you know, we got to keep that in context. And I'm obviously happy about that and was rooting for him all the way through. Caps off an incredible individual season as well for him and for the Thunder.
No, I mean, again, one of the best individual seasons of all time.
Yeah. Like, it's just, so, you know, I'm glad that it ended that way versus, you know, a loss in the finals, which against the Pacers, considering, you know, their profile as a regular season team, would have felt like a failure for OKC. That, you know, getting to the finals, that they had to win it. They understood that pressure. And as a young team, they actually delivered on it. So, you know, shout them out. They did face a lot of adversity. They faced adversity in that Denver series. They faced obviously a lot of adversity in this series, not so much, you know, the other two rounds versus the Timberwolves and the Grizzlies, but they earned this. As a young team, that's always going to be incredibly impressive to be able to go in and win that early, especially for guys like Chet and Jalen Williams, for God's sake. Like, they literally, it was Jalen Williams' first drink. Freaking the other big Jalen Williams didn't even know how to, I think it was his first taste of beer. He like cracked open the Michelob or whatever. He's like, oh, this is gross. None of them knew how to pop the champagne. Mm-hmm. Alex Crusoe had to fucking tell him, like, so for such a young team, yeah, you do got to shout them out in the culture that they've built. How dominant they were start to finish this year. But man, it just fucking sucks, man. It sucks.
Which is like the worst feeling at the end of the year, because now we're just
it's
stuck.
Like, we don't deserve this. It's just bullshit, man.
And I genuinely don't remember the last time there was an injury like this where I actually felt like gutted, like emotionally, like I had that like pit in my stomach. And I'm not even a fan of the Pacers. Like, we've seen lots of guys get injured. We've seen them go down. But it's like, you know what? It's part of the game. Like, it happens. It sucks. But, you know, it's going to occur at some point. But I don't know. This one, just obviously, I think with all the attention, the magnitude of the moment, how early on it was, like, it's just, though, it's the worst, man. Like, this is up there for one of the most disappointing kind of results of a game, honestly, in our lifetime. Like, for as an NBA fan, like, I can't think of many other moments that, you know, you can really highlight, like genuinely, like I, you know, who knows how this all pans out. You know, modern medicine is a lot better than it was even, you know, 15 years ago, but like Derrick Rose tearing his ACL in the playoffs. Like, that is like one of the only other moments that I can think of where it's like, wow, like this actually is horrible. And again, even then, I don't even think, I think that one might also be like, you know, I'm clouded in hindsight because we know that he never bounced back and he never got back to where he was. And he had tons of more injuries, you know, through the rest of his career that plagued him. So it just fucking sucks because again, I honestly do believe, I'm putting this out there, and it sucks to say because I've always, like I said, been against the whole asterisks, you know, people, the what ifs, like the injuries are part of the game. But if Tyrese Haliburton doesn't get hurt, I am standing 10 toes down. They would have won that game. They would have been NBA champions.
I'm doing it too. Same.
The Thunder, they won the game. It was, they were down at the half. They were down at the half.
They were. Yes.
At one point, but even then, it should never even have been close at that point. Yeah, they go on that run in the third quarter. And you know, the thing to me that really sticks out is, you know, there's two sides to it. One, the Pacers, the reason that run really happens is because no one on the Pacers could just buy a bucket. No one could get anything to fall. It was TJ McConnell scoring, I think, 12 points in a row for his team.
Insane.
You know, still lots of misses between those. Wasn't, you know, consecutive, but he was the one that was going out there and hooping and trying to keep his team alive. Like, he left it all out on the floor. I think, again, like, another guy who it's like this one almost felt like, you said that you were talking about Cinderella runs, like, and they showed I text you, I said, I don't think they've ever shown so much of the team that lost after the game. Like,
no, definitely not.
I swear to God, it's usually you see them, they get wept off the court, and that's it. You don't see them in the locker rooms. You don't see them walking to the tunnel crying and hugging people and all this other shit. It was just like they I think everybody wanted the Pacers to win. That's just the way it kind of felt in this. And so you see all the heart and the hustle and effort they put into that run at the end, especially, you know, like TJ McConnell, like I'm saying. But the Thunder weren't hitting shots either. Like, their offense was shit. They were bad. Like you said, like Shea shoots 8 for 27 from the floor. He has to get to the line 12 times to kind of salvage the total performance, you know, on the night. Like, that's only 18 points from the floor. Like, he was amazing as a facilitator.
That's true.
Not going to take that away from him. But, like, I actually said at one point, I was like, he's got to stop shooting fucking threes. Like, 2 for 12 as a point guard in the NBA today, that's fucking crazy. Like, I don't think I've ever seen him shoot 12 threes in a game before.
No, that's a lot.
But the fact that he just kept jacking them up, and then you kind of couple that with the fact that he was able to do that because the Pacers just had no firepower. I think their spirits had been crushed a little bit. Like, they just didn't have that fight in them left to go at them. And again, same thing. Like, Jalen Williams was like their next best player. 20 points, 7 for 20 shooting. Like, it was just they were able to get away with a lot of shit in this game.
Yes.
That I think if Tyrese Haliburton is there, you know, that third quarter run, like, the Pacers' offense is so much better with Tyrese on the floor. Like, obviously, that's the fucking most obvious statement of the finals that anyone could make. But, like, it's not just, you know, him going out there and getting buckets. It's the amount of attention he draws. It's the playmaking ability, the vision, the passing, the creativity, the confidence. Everything that he, like, funnels directly into that team is just so immeasurable. And I don't think that the Thunder go on that third quarter run. You know, who even knows what the end of the first quarter looks like if Tyrese never goes down? Like, it really sucks because, and you know, who knows? Maybe he has he goes 3 for 5 to start the game. He ends up finishing, you know, 4 for 20 or something.
I know. It's hard to play the game like this, but like, it's hard not to, though, like, because, it's just, it's hard not to play the what if game with, how he looked, and like, it's just, I hate that we're having to do this, but I'm doing it in my head too.
And I mean, to go away from, you know, some of the negative feelings of it, I mean, overall, this still was an awesome series. Like, this is by far obviously 2019 was different for us because, you know, where we are Raptors faithful, but I don't know if I've been this like dialed in and this like, you know, happy to watch game to game a series since maybe like the 2016 Cavs versus Warriors. That level of, you know, interest and intrigue for me and, you know, competitiveness. And I, like there's been good finals, there've been decent matchups, but like they just never, there's always one side of it where you're kind of like, this isn't legit. Yeah. Like fucking the bubble, the Lakers and the Heat, like no yeah. one thought the Heat were going to win that series. Same with when the Heat played the Nuggets. Nobody thought that the Heat were going to actually give them run for their money. And I mean, to be fair, in this one, a lot of, nobody thought the Pacers were going to give the Thunder a run. But at least they actually did. Like, I think that the
Heat made it good.
The Heat took the 2020 Lakers to six, but that was kind of fugazi. Yep. And then the 2023 Nuggets, that was five games. That was a fucking bitch slap. Like, it was – The Celtics and Warriors 2022 was okay. Like, they had some moments. It was competitive. But, like, you know, you could tell that the Warriors were pulling ahead and everything. Like, this one really was up in the air. Nobody really had a beat on how it was going to go.
And I don't know if you saw, Matt, the stat going around before Game 7. I mean, simple, more so like a fact than a stat. But that the last three Game 7s, whoever won Game 6 – yeah, Game 7's in the finals. Whoever won Game 6 won Game 7 as well. That was 2010. 2010, the Lakers were down 3-2, tied it and won it. 2013, obviously, Ray Allen hits that shot for the Heat. They win it. And then, obviously, 3-1 down for the Cavs in 2016. So, Pacers also had a little bit of history on their side as well.
Insane.
And because that's the other thing, too. You're talking about how great the series is. I totally agree. Like, I don't remember enjoying a final series this much, which is... such a funny outcome based on how everyone was talking about it going into
100%. I don't think either of us were that happy. Like, we said no teams, but it wasn't what we wanted.
No, and it's like, because we thought it would be over quickly. It's two small market teams. Yep. I thought it was going to be shit on by all the casuals and people talking about the ratings and everything. So it turns out into this amazing thing. The other thing I thought, too, I was like, thank God that through this series, injuries haven't really played a part. Like, I think I mentioned it in one of our more recent podcasts. No one was hurt on either side. You had no one on the injury report, at least no one, important. Obviously, guys are dealing with things, even Halliburton before this with the calf strain, but he was able to, after going out in that game five or whenever it was, come back in game six, play decently. And like, we just had good luck with that.
Yeah.
And I was thinking back in 2010, Celtics Lakers. People forget Kendrick Perkins injured himself. He's the Lakers or the Celtics starting center injured himself before or got injured, I should say, before game seven. And that changed the complexion of that game as well. Like, that's a huge interior presence that the Celtics just didn't have. And they lose that on the road in a final game seven. And you can play the what if game there as well. He just kind of comes down awkwardly on an ankle. And that was a close one down to the wire, even without him. Where that famous, Meta World Peace now, but Ron Artest, when he hits that sort of jab, step three on the right wing. So there's you think back to sort of great series and great finals. This is 100% going to be in that category for me. But and that's why it sucks even more than it had to end like this. Because we just didn't get the game we were promised, and that's always really shitty. Whoa. And just to your point too, Matt, quickly about how they were panning to all the fucking, guys on the Pacers side. Mm-hmm. I think part of the reason too is that, like, if you're the crew working this game or whatever, you're going to want to like follow the emotion. That's normally where you want to go. Like, cause that's going to be the most, interesting thing for people to watch. Like, remember in 2011 when the Mavs, under Rick Carlisle pulled off that fucking thing, they zoom in on Dirk and Dirk is like so overwhelmed with emotion. He just leaves. He like jumps over people and leaves as the game is ending. He goes back into the locker room because there's such a long time coming for him. He got beat by the Heat after going up 2-0 on them in 2006. The freaking Dwayne Wade and Shaq ring, like that's he's getting revenge on that. It's like all this stuff for so many like NBA champions. It's like such a like long time coming. These guys are just overwhelmed with emotion. The Thunder, like, SGA was barely even cracking a smile. He was walking, getting checked out with 2 minutes left. He's like,
they had shake him on the sideline. He kind of just like an awkward smile. It was, it was lame.
So it's like, so you're doing that. You've got that on the one side and you're looking at Aaron Nesmith crying on the bench because he fouls out because he wants it so bad. And you said TJ McConnell, his mom covering him with the towel and going to with her arm to the cameras, like back up a little bit, like have some respect. Like, it really felt like that was, the championship emotion was really way more channeled through the Pacers than it was through the Thunder by like a million.
More, man.
Yeah, that's like, the thing.
If it was so the other way around, I don't think those Young Thunder guys would be crying on the sideline. I really don't.
I think they'd just be kind of blank-faced, like, oh, well, we're going to come back next year and be better, which, you know, that's fine. That's the way they've been all year. But, yeah, it's just it way more feels that sort of how a NBA championship is supposed to feel, the joy and the pain. It's way more with the Pacers than with the Thunder. I don't know if that's kind of unfair to put that on OKC, but that's just the way it was.
Yeah, yeah, just sucks, man. I don't know how many times I'm going to say it, but yeah, it's looking ahead too. You know, we'll talk about the Pacers here, the runners up before we look at the future here for the Thunder, because it's going to be interesting next year. Like I said, you know, there's no official timetable out there, but I think it's likely that, you know, we don't see Tyrese Haliburton until well after the All-Star break, and without him. Like, is this team going to be good enough to, like, are they, like, where are they going to slot? Like, this Eastern Conference next year is actually completely fucking wide open. We're going to have, like, the Raptors, Brooklyn Nets are going to be a 5 seed. Like, it's insane.
The Raptors need to go balls to the wall here. Cause,
dude, this is their, this is got the an chance. Open. There's a couple teams out there in the East. They might as well, you know, just swing Detroit, for the fences. Yeah, the Pistons have a legitimate chance.
The Magic also, just traded for Bane.
No, it's legit. And, I mean, like, the Pacers do have the benefit that they will be able to roll back pretty much almost the entire team. You know, like Miles Turner is their big, you know, unrestricted free agent. I don't imagine he wants to go anywhere, especially after, you know, coming up just so close. He loves Indiana, it seems like, and I think they've got a good rapport there. I don't think he has any interest in going. And everybody else is either restricted free agent or it's like, you know, James Johnson, who, you know, is, as they say, a very vocal leader, but he doesn't actually do anything for them on the court production. And then Thomas Bryant's the other unrestricted free agent for them, so it's
that's fine. I think they can eat that loss.
I don't think that they're and even then, if they want him back, I'm sure he'd sign a vet min. Like, I'm pretty sure they only got him like halfway through this year or whatever off the scrap heap. So I'm pretty confident this Pacers team will roll back essentially this entire roster. But yeah, it's I don't know. Like, Siakam, we're going to have to see what 1A Siakam looks like in the NBA, because it is going to be up to him. Maybe we will get to see, you know, TJ McConnell get his opportunity as a starting point guard in the NBA. Yeah. You know, that's something that, you know, maybe they do that. Maybe they have Nembhard start. I'm not sure how that's all going to go. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting season. I don't think that they're going to be like the world beaters that, you know, even if they had lost this series, if, you know, Haliburton doesn't get injured, they just straight up lose. Like, next year, I would have been like, yeah, they're a top 3 seed in the East.
Yeah, I also totally agree with people sort of putting them as the favorite to even come out of the East again next year, given everything that's happening with pre-Hallie injury, obviously. Like, given everything that's going on with, you know, the fact that Dame's out, not that the Bucks were even that good when he was in the lineup, but that's part of it. Everything that's going on in Boston, because not only with Jason Tatum being out for this period of time, they have to figure out financially what that team's going to look like. So with everything up in the air, like I totally agreed with that. If the Pacers were to just run it back, this team would be filled with so much confidence going into next year. Guys would be taking steps. Like, obviously Siakam's a little bit on the older side, but I don't think he's like anywhere near super quickly declining or anything that. Same with Miles Turner. Like, you've got enough young guys who are going to more than mitigate that with the step ups that they're going to take, you know, presumably going into next year. But like, I don't know. Like, I think that they're actually in a decent position to weather the storm, at least better than other teams because of how much playmaking they have. Like, Nembhard can be a point guard. Like, Nembhard can go out there and play point guard in a pinch. And if you have to do it for like, you know, most of the season, I think that that's okay. There's way worse options out there, especially if you do have TJ McConnell able to come in, you know, play whatever minutes he needs to play, you know, in a little bit of an expanded role, but probably still coming off the bench. I think the thing that you need to really weather the storm and like stay, you know, avoid the play-in, stay as like a playoff team is to have Mathurin take like a jump. And I think he's shown, like, the fact that he had that game in game 3 where he goes off for 27 points. Even this game tonight, he was, 24 points? Like, I know a lot of this was in a weird, you know, environment here.
Like,
where
a billion free throws was in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. 10 of them there. So it's like that, you know, maybe you take that with a grain of salt. But the fact that he was able to be out there on the court at least some of the time in an NBA Finals tells you that he has the ability and in an expanded role, probably as a starter next year. Can he bump his production up to, you know, getting up to like 20 points per game ish in that range? Can he do that? And if he does, with what Siakam's giving you, presumably, like, and you know, the team that we know is makes a lot of sense positionally and everything that we've raved about, like, I think they can actually handle it better than other teams in that position. Not that they're going to be like, obviously I don't think they're going to be, you know, a fucking top three seed without Haliburton next year, but I could see them in that sort of 5-6 range, maybe even 4, for as long as he's out. If the rest of them can stay healthy, that's the thing though. You're dealing with a guy who's out for, you know, long term, who's just not going to be there. You go through the normal wear and tear of injuries during a season. Like, Siakam doesn't have a perfectly clean injury history or track record either, and with more pressure on him, you know, that could be something that you got to deal with as well. So they just have their margin for error now is just so slim. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, I also, you know, might be overestimating how much those guys can step up as well, because we always sort of look at the box score, look at sort of the raw stats, look at what Tyrese does, and especially how good CJ McConnell plays in his absence. That's a very different thing, like, to do that in spurts, like, as a luxury versus actually relying on that. Mm-hmm. And sort of it's easy to overlook how important Tyrese is, just his presence on the floor, the things that don't show up on the stat sheet. He's the straw that stirs that drink, as people have been saying. Like, there's no way around it. There's no replacing him. So it is going to be tough. They're lucky though that there's a bunch of bullshit happening in the East right now, and a bunch of, like, we have no idea where things are going to fall, because you go through something like this in the West, where your best player is out for most of the season, you might as well call it quits. So, you know, in that sense, they're in a decent position, but we'll see. They're sort of the natural order where it's like, oh, we're a finals team, so we're going to be one of the best teams in the conference next year. It's just that's taken away from them as well.
Yeah, well, moving over there onto the Thunder, you know, you're talking about the Western Conference, how good it is, and, you know, we're going to be talking about this big blockbuster Kevin Durant trade in just a few moments here. The West getting better. The Thunder, I feel like I'm on two sides of this take. First off, I mean, the initial thought, you know, is that they are, you know, an average age of whatever they were, 25, 26 years old. SGA is literally in his complete prime. Chet is going to get better. Jalen Williams is going to get better. Pretty much their entire bench is going to get better. This whole team will get better. They're going to get more, you know, chemistry developed. They are going to have the championship confidence. This is like a team that should be able to compete for, you know, multiple titles now in the next, you know, 5-6 seasons. But the other side of it is like, nothing in this life is guaranteed anymore. I think you look at like a team like the Celtics, which, you know, they finally get over the hump last year, and we all said the same thing. They're stacked, they're young, they're in a good situation, they flow well together. And then, you know, Jason Tatum goes down this year, but they weren't going to beat the Pacers anyways. Even if he didn't get injured in that game, they were going to lose this series. I believe that. I don't think they were going
to
come back.
To the Knicks. 3-1.
Oh, fuck, it was the Knicks. Oh, my God. So, yeah. They didn't even have to fucking play the Pacers. Like, so, yeah, it's...
But for the record, I think maybe this Pacers team, with what they showed, would have beaten a fully healthy Celtics team.
It would have been
throwing that out there just because, my God, they look so good. But, go on.
So, I'm kind of like... I don't want to go too jumping the gun here with this Thunder future, but I think that, you know, right now, like, the best is yet to come still, potentially, with this squad. You know, I talked about all the free agents for the Pacers there. There are none for the Thunder.
I think they have 15 players already for next year.
Yeah. Dude, the A.J. Mitchell and Jalen Williams have team options. I'm sure they're going to pick both of them back up. And then there are three, like, reserves, guys who don't dress, Brandon Carlson, Alex Dukas, and Adam Flagler. Are all restricted free agents. I don't think they give two fucks whether any three of those guys come back. No disrespect to the Flagster, but they don't play. They're not going to make an impact. Now, Nikola Topic will be fucking in the lineup next year, and people forget that guy's going to be a fucking demon too, potentially. At least before he had that ACL tear, looked like he was going to be a pretty solid prospect, and they snagged him up last year in the draft. So this team is super scary. Obviously, the West is insanely, insanely stacked and competitive. But even amongst all the best teams there in the West, like the Thunder really do still stand alone. And yeah, I, I, I wouldn't bet against them not being back in the finals next year, even with the West being as competitive as it is.
Yeah, same. I'm taking them over the field, I think, you know, at this point. Like, you know, everything, it's true to point out the Celtics, like, and where they were in that, you know, already about to be down 3-1 in that series against New York, regardless of the Tatum thing. Could they have come back from a 3-1 deficit? Yes, possibly. Mm-hmm. I don't think they were either. I agree that I don't think that was happening. But, you know, they had other things, too, that they were dealing with, like, in terms of injuries or
yep.
things keeping guys out. Like, Porzingis was dealing with his whole ghost illness and everything. So, like, there were things kind of compounding, you know, with that team already with the amount they were paying their top six guys, as we all know. Like, they weren't the deepest team, you know, in the league by any means as well. You look at the Thunder and it's like those things maybe could happen too. If you have a lingering injury to one guy, that puts pressure on everyone
Chet
else.
Holmgren,
that
makes it more he's always good for a likely. 30 game absence at yeah. some point in the season.
Yeah, for sure. So like you hope, you know, that they can stay healthy, but like throughout this year, they dealt with a bunch of injuries too. Like, how many games would they have won if they had a fully healthy season?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we could be talking about one of the best, if not the best team of all time. Like, that's what they were on pace to win.
It's true.
You know, would they have had Chet and Hartenstein all year and the other guys that they missed for little stretches? So, yeah, it's just they're in an incredible position. You're right, though. Anything could change. Still, no one has repeated since the in 17 and 18 with the historically stacked you know, Warriors team, so it's like what are we going to take here? Like what we view as this very clear runway for the next 5, 6, 7 years for the Thunder, or history saying that something is going to derail these guys, some other team is going to catch up. And like, even with how dominant they were this year, I understand that, you know, that we're saying that could probably get even better from here, but they were pushed to 7 games twice. And both times they got lucky with injuries to very key star players, with Aaron Gordon in the Nuggets series, and obviously Tyrese here in the finals. And you know, you never know what would have happened if both those teams had stayed fully healthy. And the thing about those teams, if you're the rest of the league thinking, how do we beat the Thunder? Those teams had absolutely like just excellent offensive firepower and sort of execution. When mm-hmm. you look at the peak of where the Pacers got to, and obviously any offense run by Jokic is just going to be, you know, the most effective thing you could put out there on the floor. So it's like you're looking at the Thunder. Yes, you're expecting Jalen Williams to take a leap, and you're expecting SGA to get even better. Obviously, Chet and all these guys, but their offense sometimes just does not look at the level of some of these other sort of great offensive teams. And if their defense slips at all, which could happen, we've seen young guys like a Jalen Williams. As he gets more, like as those type of players get more sort of responsibility and get even better offensively, their defense maybe doesn't look quite as good. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but we saw that happen with like a guy like Bradley Beal. You always point out when he first came into the league, he was actually a pretty decent defender.
Mm-hmm.
Even Siakam, I would say, he went through stretches where he didn't look quite as good defensively, especially towards the end in Toronto versus when he was kind of like a young buck. So If the OKC Thunder defense doesn't stay at like this historical level, and they lose, let's say, Hartenstein, if they can't pay him down the line, or they lose Caruso or some other guys, Cason Wallace, maybe he goes get paid somewhere else, then, you know, they can maybe be a little bit vulnerable if they don't have this insane swarming sort of defensive group, and you've got other teams that are just better offensively than them. So we'll see. I don't think, you know, we can't predict anything that far ahead. And, you know, we can only go based on what we know now. But, yeah, it looks right now like they've got that runway. But, you know, these other teams in the West who have aspirations themselves, like they're not going to want to sit still. I mean, Denver has a whole new front office. What are they going to do? Are they going to mm-hmm. make moves that maybe put them over the top? Like, they were one game away from beating this team as well. So there's going to be a lot that they still have to prove going forward. But in terms of a team that's just won the championship and how they're set up with age, contracts, draft picks, yeah. we've never had a team better positioned to win multiple ever.
Yeah, well, that's what I was gonna say. Even if they had injuries, they always have that war chest of picks to fall back on. Like, yep. obviously, you know, this year I don't think that any of those picks are really going to get moved for anything huge at this point, but they do have two first round picks. this just yeah, in this upcoming insane. Draft. They've got three first round picks in 2026, their own top eight protected from Utah, which, you know, that one might end up getting deferred to back to the Jazz, and then top four protected from the Sixers, which, you know, you would think that won't be the case. But I mean, we'll see what the same thing happened this year. 2027, they've got two first round picks, and the one is swapped with the Clippers, which 2027, I mean, that could be scary. Yeah. That could be worth something crazy. And then 2028 through to like 2030, they have insane amounts of picks. Like, I'm just not going to go through all of them. Like, so they can make a Godfather offer, you know, young talent, draft picks, everything to any team that they really want. And there's honestly almost nothing you can do about it but say yes, unless you just are thinking that, you know, if you're going to make them better and you're trying to compete for a title, you can't do business with them. But if you're a team that's trying to rebuild, you kind of just have to make that deal with the devil. And I think that's kind of what the Thunder and Sam Presti are at this point in the modern NBA. But yeah, it's going to be scary. And yeah, we could be looking at our first juggernaut and kind of a dynasty potentially in the NBA in over a decade, which, you know, we had a good run without these super teams, but this one was homegrown. We can't disrespect it too much.
That's true.
We'll see where they go from here, and you know, the ceiling to this this young OKC team. And yeah, congrats one more time to the Oklahoma City Thunder for winning the 2025 NBA championship, going down in history as champions forever. Moving on,
Lou Dort, the Canadian as well.
Yes,
just quickly, got to say his name. That one shot he hit, the bomb three off of broken play, was in the second or third quarter, was. That was only Lou Dort could surprise me with a shot like that. So shout him out. He's an absolute dog.
Somehow every single one of his shots, I think that the arc on it, it's going to somehow touch the moon. Ceiling. Yeah, it's insane.
It's crazy.
Oh, man. Like, it's not even contested. It'll be wide open. He's fucking lobbing it straight in the air. Yeah, it's a wild arc. But you know,
do you think it's because it's from when he got blocked by James Harden on that Game 7 their series? He's like, I can't let that happen again. I got to really hoist it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If anyone wants to question the heart of this Thunder team, go back and watch that series. What a weird one. Russ and awesome. James Harden versus SGA and Chris Paul. Lou Dort, rookie year.
Dennis
Schroeder. Shooting like 18 threes and hitting two of them. What a fucking series that was.
Crazy.
Steven Adams, I can't remember what the hell happened at the end of he blew something at the very end of the game. He fucked up. Can't remember how that went.
Oh, yeah.
But
I'm remembering.
It's a while ago. Dennis Schroeder was also on that team. That was the big three, the point guard.
Three guard lineup.
Yeah, insane.
Yep. That was fun.
Yeah, it was a cool team. I thought they were going to win.
Funny, because I think about that the other day. Shea kind of plays like he's like taken little things from all the guys he's played with, like a little bit of Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. He kind of moves like Dennis Schroeder sometimes. The like crafty, like weirdness, the way he like slithers through. I think he learned that from DS.
Maybe really, really upgraded his defense this year. Learned a little thing from Caruso.
Yes.
Maybe took the passing a little bit from Giddey. I don't know. We're getting crazy here.
Just the passing.
Yeah, just the passing. That's it. I don't know, man. Maybe we can start calling him Cell. Shout out to all the Dragon Ball Z fans out there. He's absorbing the talent of other people.
Yes.
To move on here, Jordan, you know, to end off today's podcast, crazy news went down even before Game 7 happened, and we were traded to the final... I shouldn't even say the final trade of his career, because it's fucking Kevin Durant, and things could be... We could be talking about this next year. He's getting traded to another fucking team. But Kevin Durant... officially traded from the Phoenix Suns in the absolute disaster class of that front office. Continuing as he is traded to the Houston Rockets in exchange for Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, the number 10 pick in this year's 2025 NBA draft, which was the Suns pick that they are now getting back.
Yes,
five second round picks in that. And I believe that was that pick was traded to Brooklyn and then Brooklyn to Houston and now back to Phoenix. Yeah. And Jordan, I mean, it's an interesting haul because, you know, you get two solid players in Jalen Green and Dylan Brooks. And, you know, Dylan Brooks, we kind of all know what he brings to the table. You know, good veteran guy, plays hard defense, can shoot the three, you know, a bit of a loudmouth, but a good guy, good locker room guy to have on a team, good leader. And then you get Jalen Green, who's 23. He's shown moments, these flashes where it's like, oh, could he be like an elite offensive talent? And then there's other times where it's like, could he even play in the G League? it's a very interesting, you know, player haul. And then you get one first and 5 seconds. Like, I know Kevin Durant is 36. I get that he doesn't have much time left in the NBA. It's not, you know, a forever thing by getting him. It's not the Kevin Durant of, you know, 2016, where it's the you know, one of the best players the league's ever seen. Like, this is an older version of him. He is not able to carry, but I still think there had to have been better offers on the table than what the fucking Suns just got. Like, I actually think that their dumb asses were like, oh, hey, let's just go get our first round pick back because that just seems like it would be nice to have. And then they just said, whatever they're willing to give, let's make the salaries work. And, you're not willing to give up any other picks, not one other first? Okay, we'll just take every second round pick you have. That sounds great. Yeah. We'll find 5 Nikola Jokic's in the second round. It's just I really think that the Rockets fleece them on this one. I really think this is an awesome, awesome get for them. Fits their team perfectly. The exact guy we've been telling them that they needed to get for the last two seasons. They were already the second best team in the Western Conference in the regular season, and you know, in the playoffs, the one thing that they kind of lacked, in that first round matchup was. Yeah, with the Warriors was, you know, finding a
go-to scorer.
Yeah, a go-to scorer, a guy who could go and get his own bucket. And now they've got one of the best the game's ever seen. Yeah, it's nuts. The Rockets are, you know, going to actually be able to compete for a title next year if all things go according to plan, because that starting five of Freddie VanVleet, Amen Thompson, Kevin Durant, Sengun, and then, you know, if you want to go to the double bigs with Adams, or if you want to slide in Tari Eason or any of the other Jabari Smith, there's tons of guys that they can, you know, play and operate with, tons of depth, still okay, you know, draft capital if things somehow go south. But yeah, I love this move for the Rockets. But the Suns, they now also have insane, like, exuberant amount of fucking shooting guards. Like, the fit was already bad on this team, and now they just made it even worse. So, if I was Dylan Brooks, I would be requesting a trade at this point. or Dylan Brooks, sorry. I mean, Dylan Brooks should be requesting a trade too. I'm
Dylan Brooks, maybe too. Dylan
Brooks, deep DBs. But yeah, I think this is just continuing to show that the Matashiba era of the Suns is just fucked. Like, he should not be allowed to own a basketball team or have any say in operations. Like, he is actually fucking clueless. Maybe one of the worst I've ever seen. The Rockets are looking like they could be one of the top contenders for the title next year.
Well, Matt Ishbia, he's saying he wants to be more involved this year. So maybe this is the first instance of it. Maybe he had his hands all over this. He wasn't involved enough before. I agree. I like this for the Rockets a lot, just because, yes, he's Kevin Durant. He's nearing the end of his career. Something could happen where he could miss a lot of time. You know, injuries. He's been riddled with them in the last few years. And sneakily, the teams he's gone to have kind of been messes, and they haven't been that good. They've kind of underachieved basically since the whole ordeal in Brooklyn went down. And that's just been the way it's been.
But he hasn't gotten out in the second round since Brooklyn.
Yeah. And you know, has been sort of put up the same stats, but you know, in the regular season, it's like, oh, look at Kevin Durant. He's still averaging 27, whatever per game. But in the playoffs, he's just looked a tad slow, just that he's not able to sort of deliver at the same level. But I will say, he's now joining a team, one of the best defenses in the NBA, one of the sort of toughest teams in the NBA. It's like the perfect place for him to go. Like, I really think that what Ime Udoka and Fred VanVleet and all those guys have built there, like, maybe I'll regret saying this and I'll be wrong, but like, Kevin Durant almost can't screw it up. Like, there's already a culture there. There's already a way that they want to play, a style, and him coming in, at least from the outside right now, it seems like it can only be additive, because he's going to give them exactly what they need. Just a guy who can go get them a bucket. So it's not Fred VanVleet trying to do it against guys who are feet taller than him, at the end of these close games. So, and in terms of what you're giving up for him, Dylan Brooks, he was a big part of I'll give him credit. He was a big part of turning the Rockets around. He was always going to be expendable. He was always going to be a guy who they could trade if they needed to upgrade.
Hey, man, the Grizzlies, they're still reeling from trading him.
Well, that's true. You're right. Just watch out for what you lose trading a guy like that. But in the grand scheme of things, I'm not surprised that they moved on from him. the Jalen Green thing, like they were already looking for a solution to that. It was already pretty clear that Şengün was kind of the better guy, young guy that they wanted to build around. They have this breakout season from Thompson, and it's like, okay, where does Jalen Green really fit into this? I think this was the sort of perfect scenario to pop up, just getting this you know, one of the most talented scorers we've ever seen in the league, just throwing him in a trade for that guy. And it's like, there, he's off our hands now. We don't even have to think about this. So on the Houston side, I really do like it. And yeah, if you're the Suns, like, I have the same instinct as you of like, really, this was the best offer. But apparently, like, no one was giving them good offers. Like, I heard that Toronto took Jakob Poeltl off the table for a Durant trade, a possible Durant trade. So that's how we felt about it, apparently.
For the record, I mean, even with the East being open, I don't fucking want him.
Me too. I don't either. But, like, apparently the they were talking to Miami as well, and Miami took some crazy, pieces off the table in those discussions.
No Khalil Ware or anything.
Like, yeah, like, people were just not putting their best, their best offers on the table. And it's like, maybe that was the best one. Like, Houston in a position to have a potentially talented young player you could maybe see building around, and Jalen Green, that just clearly was, you know, not going to be part of the future, but, you know, based on the thinking of the Houston front office. So that, you know, when you think about it that way, maybe that was the best offer they were going to get, but it still just feels really weird. As you say, now having Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, and Jalen Green, like, what the fuck are we doing? This is like when Philly, the process years, kept drafting centers. And it just, you know, it just made absolutely no sense. Cause you're also still in the position with the no trade clause with Bradley Beal. So you kind of have to just park him there because he also has a terrible contract. Yeah. If you're Devin Booker, like, you've got to be wanting out of there, because I don't see how they're going to turn this around in time for him to still be at a point in his career where, like, he's fully in his prime. Like, this is now going to take a few years to get back, because you have so many of your draft picks are still out the window. Like, unless you hit the 10 pick this year out of the park, like, how are you going to compete with Devin Booker still there? So yeah, if I'm him, I'm 100% trying to get out of there. And if you are the Suns, you can then say, like, whatever haul we get for Devin Booker, whatever picks we get for that, like, we can build around Jalen Green. Maybe we keep Dylan Brooks, for a little bit. He'll help us win some games. He'll provide some toughness, be a bit of an enforcer for Jalen Green even. And then you try as soon as you can to get off of Bradley Beal and just sort of rebuild from there. But I don't think there's a way now with this move where you can just kind of retool. Like, it just, Green and Booker on the same team just make absolutely no sense to me. So if I'm, you know, in the market for a shooting guard, I'd be making calls about Devin Booker a lot going forward here. Cause yeah, it just does not make sense for those two to share the court. If you're going to ask me, do I think building around Jalen Green is a good idea? I'm going to say no right now, it's something. But they're just in a bad spot. They continue to be in a bad spot. Trading Kevin Durant was the right move, and it was something we all saw coming, but they're still just in a weird predicament at this point.
Yeah. And again, it's just crazy to me that it's like the fit with KD, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal was bad. Like, those three were bad. Yes. And then you made it worse. I know the starting lineup is going to be what? I'm assuming Devin Booker
at point guard
one.
Again?
Yeah, he has to be. Great. Because, like, Beal and Green have glue hands. They're not giving it up once it touches their fingertips. And then you have Brooks playing, like, small ball four, I guess, which is, like, the Rockets had him listed as a four. But, I mean, they had so many huge bodies. Like, it really wasn't like he was a four. And then fucking, what do you have, Nick Richards at the five? Like, that's a horrible fucking team.
That's very, very bad.
Like,
very bad.
The West, you'll win, like, 20 fucking games. It's actually insanity. And, again, it's like you have some talent there, but, like, they just don't work together at all. Like, even Devin Booker at his best,
you can't have three shooting guards.
No,
you can't.
Like, at his best,
that all need to play.
He is like a go out there and just get a fucking bucket guy. Like, he was one of the best young scorers when he went to the finals in 2021. He was out there just going hard, just getting fed by CP3, like just this leading the team. Wherever he had to get a bucket from on the perimeter, he could get it. And now you're gonna make him play like he's Ricky Rubio? Like,
I hate that. I hate that they've done this.
It makes no sense.
Just because he can, Well, it's like the idiots running the front office. Like, look, he can average 7 assists per game. Yeah. Let's make him the point guard. It's like you're forcing him to do that, and that's good that he can do that, but you don't want him to do that full time.
Exactly,
that's just
yeah.
such a stupid. It's the same thing with Bradley Beal. Like,
well, yeah.
You don't want him doing that either.
It's a complementary skill for him to have that extra passing ability. If he averages 5 assists and 25 points, that's better than him averaging 18 points and 8 assists. So I'm so out on the Suns. Like, I've never been more out on a fucking team in my life, I feel like, or in a long time. Like, this, I think it's just going to get worse from here. They still got fucking Grayson Allen kicking around there. They've got another guard.
A fourth,
like,
shooting guard.
Dude,
great.
It's all shooting guards. It's bad. We'll see what they decide to do in the offseason. Maybe there is some more moves to be made. Maybe they will finally get Bradley Beal to Miami and just fucking end this whole saga. I don't know.
That would be nice.
But yeah, the best way that they could honestly do this, if they actually had any brains, whether Devin Booker says he wants to go or not, would be to just trade him, get, like, because you could get a haul for Devin Booker, a guy in his prime.
Talking about Miami, maybe they would want Devin Booker if they want Bradley Beal. I mean, I don't know what you're getting back, but I agree. Like, Devin Booker, I wouldn't be surprised if the Devin Booker offer is, like, quite a bit better than what Kevin Durant just got.
Oh, dude, tons better. I mean, fucking Desmond Bane just went for 4 first-round picks. True. I think that Devin Booker gets at
the
least
magic?
5.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
So
we'll go up to 7. Who knows,
dude? I don't know. 5 and a good, like, an actual player, but a little bit better than fucking Jalen Green. But yeah, it's gonna be scary to watch the Rockets next year. They are gonna be right up there again in the top of the Western Conference, and it's gonna be scary as a Suns fan to have to watch this dog shit team go up and down the court every year or every game, trying to play against these insane squads out west. It's nuts. You're in the era of the play-in tournament. I don't even think they're going to get a whiff of 12th. Like, it's that bad.
Yep. Agreed. Yep. So we'll see. And hey, I just thought of, Devin Booker being on the market. Just got my trade machine brain going. The Raptors, could we get in on a little Devin Booker? Because him in there, either in between Quickly and Barnes, or maybe in sort of replacement of Quickly, at least in that sort of lead guard role, there's something there, maybe.
Could we interest you Devin in Grady
Booker,
Dick? And Jacoby Walter. They're
really good
shooting guards.
Yeah, they're great. You guys love the shooting guards.
What's better than one shooting guard? Trade for two shooting guards.
Well,
two
for one. You're fleecing us.
Yeah.
Devin Booker, he's just got to go, and I feel bad for him if he's not. If their plan is to keep him in, like, I'm going to be a lifetime Sun. God, I feel bad for that guy. Yeah. But I agree. They're going to be one of the worst teams in the West if they don't do nothing, or if they don't do anything from here. That's just a terrible team.
Well, let us know what you guys thought of the Kevin Durant trade, as well as your reactions to Game 7 of the NBA Finals. Your outlooks for the NBA offseason and beyond in the next year. Hope you guys have enjoyed Big Dog Ball Talk Season 4. Again, we are actually
four,
sure what season.
The fuck?
Pretty sure it's 4.
Alex,
insane. Figure this shit out, man. Let us know. But if you've been rocking with us, thank you very much. We will be, obviously still kicking around in the offseason, breaking down the big free agency signings, any trades. We'll be having our draft podcast probably coming up Wednesday morning. You guys will be able to see that. I might have already said it offhandedly on here. Maybe it was off.
You're going crazy with the draft prep.
I'm going crazy with my draft prep this year, which I'm sure will be wasted hours, but I don't care. I'm doing it anyways. I actually found some more prospects. I've got like 30 more guys to go through right now, Jordan. So we're going to have, like, I think I have like 160 guys evaluated on my board.
Jesus
or that's
Christ.
What I'm gonna have when I finish these other 30.
Yeah.
And by evaluations, we'll talk about more about that when we get in.
We're just gonna let you talk for the whole special. I'm just gonna get a beer and just sit here and listen to who you got.
Fuck it, man. We'll do a little mock draft, live mock draft. Our thing. We could do something like that.
Could
I don't know. But this has been a bit almost like Medical. Jordan Flegel, thanks for being with us, guys. We'll see you in the offseason. NBA draft coming up soon. But until then, as my good friend Jordan always says,
stay cool out there, Matt. I mean, I was telling you off camera, I do not have AC, so I've been basically
tragic,
like pacing around like a sick dog in the night. Like, I can't sit still for that long. I'm just eating constantly. I don't know what to do. So, that's where I'm at. Enjoy your AC over there.
Dunk your head in a lake. Go take a cold shower. I don't know what you would do. I said it before. I'll say it again. I went, like, pretty much my whole life never having AC, and now that I've had it, I'm not going back.
You can't go back.